Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I appreciate you taking your time to listen to us today. Today, we're very excited. We have Luke Humphrey on our show today. Luke is a 2:14 marathoner. He's part of the Hanson's Brooks Olympic Development Project, and he's been there and been running marathons for quite a long time. He's qualified for a couple Olympic trials, and he's also an exercise scientist. And recently, he just published a book. It's called The Hanson's Marathon Method. I have a copy of it here. This was released on Monday, so just a few days ago. So Luke's going to be on our show today to talk a little bit about the book, about some of the training principles in the book, as well as you know, what he's encountered in his own running. And so here to help you out and answer some questions. So Luke, welcome to the show, and thanks for taking the time out of your day to be with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jeff.
Awesome.
Good to be here.
So you know, I did a brief intro of kind of some of your running background, but I definitely didn't go into detail. Talk a little bit about, you know, your start in the sport, you know, how you progressed. You know, you obviously, well, from what I know, you know, you weren't a stud high school runner coming out, and, you know, tell us how you, you know, kind of progressed through the years and continued to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I never was, super fast in high school. You know, I think I ran 10:02, I think was my 3,200 meter PR, but, believe it or not, I did run about 50 flat in the 400 and 150, high 150s in the 800. So it was one of those things where I'm from a really small town. So, you know, we had three guys on the team that did four events every meet, no matter what. So I'd be in a 100-meter dash some days. It didn't matter. So throw it in there.
Yeah.
See what you can do. But, yeah, just fairly decent, but nothing that really stood out, and walked on at Central Michigan and ran for Craig Fuller there for 5 years, and got my degree in four, and then started a master's program my fifth year, and just went from there. But yeah, even in college, it was pretty average. I mean, we had some pretty good teams for cross country at Central. We were as high as ninth in the NCAA 1 year in cross. And, you know, we had a couple of All-Americans. I wasn't one of them. But, you know, ran 29:17, a long time ago, but I think 29:17 in the 10K my senior year. So, okay, but nothing that really stood out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Kevin and Keith, what they were looking for is they saw that I was going to run better as the distance got longer, and that was definitely the case, you know. So, I think that's why they looked at somebody like me. Plus, I was a Michigan guy anyway, so it wasn't like I had to, you know, take a big leap of faith to
right.
move, you know, 2 hours south. So, but in the end, obviously worked out well for me. I've been there since fall of 2004.
Okay.
So long time, and definitely have kind of changed roles over the last years. And but it's fun to see. You know, I enjoy kind of being the older guy on the team now,
mm-hmm.
and kind of mentoring some of the guys if they actually listen to me. I don't know if they do or not, but you know, now we got some fast guys now with Jake Riley and Colby Lowe on the team now, which is fun. I mean, it's fun seeing those guys and seeing what they can do in workouts and thinking, man, I mean, maybe I can do some more stuff. But you know, they don't, you try to tell them once you turn 30 it's all downhill and they don't believe you, but yeah, don't find out.
Yeah, so, you know, talk about, you know, kind of your marathon progression in terms of, you know, when you first started the marathon, when you got into it, you know, and how things progressed for you from a physical standpoint.
Yeah, you know, I ran a marathon right away when I came into the program, and I moved down to Detroit area probably August of 2004. And some of those, you know, like Brian and Clint and Trent were already training for Chicago. And I kind of just jumped on the train and was able to run Chicago with them. Ran 2:18 high for a debut, which, you know, at that point, 2004 was a solid time. And Americans were pretty weak in the marathon at that
mm-hmm.
point. So I think even that 2:18 was, you know, in the top 15 that year for times.
Okay.
Top 15 or 20. So it was definitely a significant debut. And then from there, you know, I thought I was going to have a good one right away. And, the next year I kind of took a step back and, ran Chicago again in 2005 and didn't do very well. But I definitely learned a lot of things about fueling and some of the more little things about marathon training, and then
Sorry, I'm going to stop you real quick. So what do you think that you learned in that year in terms of, you know, why do you feel like you didn't progress? You know, talk about some of those little things that you felt helped.
I think a lot of it was my own fault. You know, I don't think it was the training. I think, you know, obviously the training got me to 218, and it was the same training that, you know, Brian and Clint were running. They were running 214 and 213. But I think I stumbled along the way with just a lot of nutritional stuff on race day. That was actually my biggest problem, is I had a lot of issues on race day with some fueling. And I think I tried to hit a home run right away too. You know, I tried to go from 218 to just, you know, smashing one out of the park, you know, and I thought I was, you know, super good, and realized that, you know, I still had a long way to go. So in the end, I think it was very good that it happened, and it happened when I was, you know, 24 or 25, and not when I was, you know, where I'm at now, where I, you know, the years I have left aren't as, you know, as many as I had in front of me, you know. So I think it was good. I think it was good that that had happened.
Okay. So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Go ahead and keep
No,
going with
no.
your progression there.
Yeah, so, you know, 2005 definitely, and I didn't run one before. You know, I ran 2004, and then I ran again in 2005. I didn't run a spring marathon that year too. So I actually went back to the track that spring, I believe, and I did PR in the 10K. I ran 20, basically 29 flat in the 10K that year, which was good for me. And then after 2005, bounced back and ran Boston 2006, and that's where I had a big breakthrough, because I was probably in 215 shape to begin with, and then I actually went out and did it in Boston and ran, you know, 215 22 or 23, and then came back and did 215 again in Chicago that year. So that was a big year for me, but that was in 2006. And then I went from 2006 to 2011 without a PR. I'd run a couple 218s a year, but it was a lot of other things going on. I mean, I tried to do some other things, try to get back on the track. So it wasn't necessarily just because I was having a lot of bad marathons. I did have a couple fairly bad marathons. You know, after you've run 215, run 218 doesn't seem like a positive step forward, and it was. And then, you know, I mean, it's hard to say too, because I mean, one of those 218s, I was 11th overall in New York. You know, so it wasn't, you know, time wasn't there, but, you know, obviously it's, you know, feather in your cap to see you're, you know, 11th at New York. You know, it was not like, you know, I DNF'd or anything. You know, it was, you know, so it's hard to say. But
And if you
you
don't
know, now
mind,
it's
I have a lot of you know, I actually have a question. You know, how did you mentally kind of get through that process? It's, you know, that was probably a good 3 to 4 year process where, you know, you weren't hitting your marathons. And I work with a lot of athletes who struggle with that. They're training, and I'm sure you work with some too. You know, their training is going
absolutely.
good, and everything looks like it's going to be a big PR, a big day for them. And then they get out, and either something little happens, or they just don't perform on that day. How did you mentally kind of keep coming back from that? What were you telling yourself? You know, what were you working on?
It was tough. I mean, I definitely struggled with it for a while. I would say the first, well, 2000 to 2007, 2008, so maybe that first couple of years, I kept thinking, well, I'll just bounce back. But then it started dragging on and on and on. And you really start questioning yourself. You question the coaching too. You know, like, you know, or maybe this is as far as I can go with this. You know, I don't know. And so you do really struggle with it, and you really try to find your way. And in the end, it just came down to, you know, I had faith in what could happen. I mean, guys around me that were doing the same thing were seeing success. And I think the biggest thing that I learned from that was I kept trying to force workouts, and I kept trying to force things that didn't need to be forced. I think if I would have just let it, the natural progression of things take its course, I think it would have ended up being much better off, and, you know, maybe that drought would have ended a little sooner. So it is tough, and it's absolutely tough, and there's no easy way to get around it. But I think in the end of the day, you just have to look at yourself and say, okay, am I doing the right things? And take an honest look at yourself, and take an honest look at what's going on around you, and hopefully you can find the right answers to those things. You know,
No,
and I was fortunate enough to do that.
that's great to share. Like I said, I work with a lot of athletes, and I know you do too, that struggle with that. And hopefully when they listen to this, they'll kind of, you know, understand that it's sometimes it's part of the process, that it's not always a
Absolutely.
linear progression where every marathon you PR and then, you know,
Yeah, and
sometimes you go
especially the
through.
faster you get too, you know. You know, if you got, like, you know, it's fairly easy to get somebody from 4 hours to 3.5 hours, But to get them to 3 hours, then you're talking about some serious things that need to happen. And sometimes you just need to be lucky too. And,
right.
and you know, it's tough, but yeah, I mean, yeah, if you just know you're doing the right thing and have that faith in that, then it'll work out.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So now that we've, you know, kind of uncovered a little bit about your progression, you know, in the marathon and, you know, understanding that, actually let's talk a little bit about your coaching background too, just to give some people a background into that. Talk about how you got started with it. You know, you have your own business, you know, and type of athletes that you work with and those types of things.
Yeah, it started 2006. Yeah, 2006, May 2006, I think I had my first client. But it kind of started with Kevin and Keith. They really just didn't want to do the clinics anymore. I think, you know, their kids are getting older and they want to spend more time with them and what have you. And so, you know, I just finished my master's program at Oakland and you know, I say, hey, if you want this, you can take them over. So I was pretty reluctant at first just because I had so many things going on. But I finally did after I finished my master's, I had more time and I jumped on board and started taking over doing the clinics, the marathon clinics they do every year for the Detroit Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how it all started.
Okay.
And then, you know, people started asking for individual coaching. So that was the next natural step. And then, you know, you go through all the legal stuff and, you know, form the LLC and all that business and,
mm-hmm.
and take care of that stuff. And then, so there was a company and I was the CEO and I don't know what I'm doing, but I don't know about running a business, but
I feel you.
but it's fun. I mean, I like learning about that stuff as much as I like learning about physiology and biochemistry and all that stuff. It's fun to take something and run with it and see how far you can take it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, as far as athletes, it's such a huge spectrum. I have guys that are, you know, low 220s, and I have, you know, women that are in the 250s, and I have all the way up to, you know, just wanting to run one without stopping, you
mm-hmm.
know. So it's definitely a big spectrum of who I work with. And you know, the biggest struggle with that is I think sometimes people think, oh, you know, you're a 214 guy, you don't understand what it's like for a 4.5 hour marathoner. And they're right, I might not, but I know that it probably hurts. It hurts more than it would hurt me to run 215 in
right.
a marathon. And I definitely understand that. I understand the time commitments it takes to train for something like that. So, but it's fun. It's fun developing those relationships with those people. I mean, I coach about 30 people, you know, mostly online. We do some local stuff now, but, you know, most of those people I've known for years now, you know,
mm-hmm.
I've known for at least a couple of years. And that's what I like is having those relationships with those people. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're your coach, but you're a friend too. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's nice. So,
yeah, it's amazing how you can develop that relationship. Even, you know, I'm the same way. I've probably only met a handful of my clients that I coach and yet I still feel like I have a really close relationship with all of them.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's definitely exciting and you get really, I mean, last weekend was Chicago and I'm sure you had quite a people racing and, you
yeah.
know, for me, it was just awesome to watch the tracker and watch people coming in and
it was, yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Exciting. So,
yeah. And you know how it is. I mean, you're more excited to see them have a good result than maybe you are to have a good result yourself. You
right.
know? And that's what I hope people get when they have a coach and you know, I'm genuinely excited for people when I get an email and say, oh my gosh, I just PR'd by 10 minutes. I mean,
right.
that's exciting. That makes me realize, you know, and remember why you get involved with it. Cause you know, it doesn't matter how much you know about physiology or degrees or, you know, how many degrees you have or not, but it just, you know, if you can take somebody and just guide them and that's the whole work, guide them. I don't necessarily want to hold their hand. I want to guide them so they
mm-hmm.
know how to do it themselves and know how to do it themselves, right? And have them see that success is really, really fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's hard, though, because after, you know, the spring was so rough on people, I was really worried about the
fall. Oh, I know. It's tough when you coach and then every single marathon somebody runs, it's like 100 degrees. And
I know.
For people that are referencing what we're talking about, Boston this year was record highs. And then almost all of the spring marathons in the Midwest were record highs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's tough as a coach. You get all these athletes so prepared and it's just one after another. It's like,
right,
man, we can't catch a break.
I know. And it was hard. And you know it's not going to go well for most of those guys. And you try to balance between that, you know, getting them too built up or too, you know, down on themselves. So it's definitely a tough balance for sure.
Yeah. Kind of moving forward, you know, what led you to write the Hansen's book? Or let me, I'll show it to everybody again here. You know, what led you to decide to write the Hansen's Marathon Method? What kind of brought the idea about?
You know, it really just kind of fell in my lap, and it's definitely something I've thought about for a long time. And I think people in general have approached Kevin and Keith about it, but I don't think anything's ever been official. And then, you know, we were on a plane, and Keith was telling me, he's like, "Oh, I just got an email from somebody at VeloPress, and they were throwing around ideas for books for the next year." And Hansen name came up, and he's like, "There's no way I have time. Kevin and I don't have time to do this. You know, there's just too much going on." And he's like, "Well, if you want to do it, you know, I'll give you the email," and email the person back. And all of a sudden there I was, you know, in contact with VeloPress, and, you know, they were, you know, I think they thought I was just some joker off the street. And then they were kind of like, "Well, I don't really know about this." And then, you know, Kevin and Keith vouched for me, and all of a sudden there was, you know, and, you know, they're giving me a contract, you know, they sent out a contract, and, you know, it's all this stuff, and, you know,
then it gets serious.
It's like, oh man, this is, you know, so it happened pretty fast. Let me say this, it initially happened very fast, but, you know, I started writing this in May last year, and I think the original manuscript was turned in it was in October, because it was right before my wedding, and so I really wanted to have it done before we got married. And I'm sure my wife did too. So I turned it in, I sent it in, and then, you know, since then it's been just, you know, back and forth, fine-tuning and all this stuff. And then, you know, the actual pressing of the book only takes like 2 days, you know. So
right.
Did all this work, and then all of a sudden there's a book, you know, and getting one in the mail. There it is. But it's, you know, it really fell in my lap. You know, I happened to be, you know, and it helped too. I coach a guy in a town close to here, and he wrote a triathlon book for VeloPress a couple years ago. Trizophenia, I think it's called. It's a strange name, but he's a syndicated cartoonist as well. So he's got a crazy story. But him and I were kind of throwing back and forth the idea of a book, and then it was literally like after I talked to him a week later, this happened. So, but it just fell in place. Everything was there at the right time, and it just happened.
Yeah. So now that we know kind of how the process came about, let's get started diving in a little bit to what the book is. You know, we won't give any secrets away, but, you know, what do you feel, you know, when writing this book? And I know there's obviously some interest in it, and partially it's because, you know, what's the difference between what you feel the Hansen's Marathon Method, how you coach, and kind of traditional marathon training plans? Where does the Hansen's Marathon Method differ, and why?
I think as far as why it's different is also the reason why anybody can do it. But I think that without throwing names out there, you know, you have programs where it's, you know, a super long buildup, but it has to be a long buildup because the mileage is so low. So you really take somebody who's doing 20, 30 miles a week, maybe, and then adding stuff to it slowly and slowly. So, I mean, certain programs I've seen are, you know, 30 some weeks long. Just really, really slow buildup. And, you know, for some people that might be what they need. But as far as the average person, if you're already running, I don't see why you need, you know, that long to build up. And the other thing is obviously, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about the 16 miler. But what I see a lot of times is, you look at a program that has 20, I've even seen 22, 24, 26 mile long runs on certain programs, but then you're not doing anything the rest of the week. And that's
right.
The whole point is, yeah, you made it, which I didn't understand either, because I saw the one schedule I looked at was a 26-mile long run, and it was basically for somebody who all they want to do is finish a marathon. So they make them finish a marathon and then go pay money to go run a marathon. I don't understand it, but anyway, I mean, you know, so yeah, I mean, you can go out there and do the long run, but you really miss out on so many other things. And I think what people want, they want to be told that they can run 2 or 3 days a week, and they can finish a marathon, which is true, absolutely true. You can do that. But I don't think, you know, for the long-term development and if you really want to do something lifelong, I mean, most of those people who are doing those types of programs, they, in all honesty, they probably just want to do one marathon and say, hey, I did it. I don't ever want to do it again. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. That's fine. But, you know, I was talking to Kevin about this actually when I was writing the book, and, you know, he was talking about how, you know, really when they started those programs, it was more about, okay, how do I take that person and then get them to where they can run a marathon well, and then say, wow, I want to do this again. You know, I don't want to just run one and be done with it. I want to keep doing this the rest of my life. And so that's kind of where Kevin and Keith are coming from with the program, and why it's more, you know, the mileage itself isn't incredibly high, but it's just more balanced throughout the week. It's not, you know, obviously you saw the schedules, you know, you're doing a fairly long tempo run during the week, and you're doing a 16 mile on the weekend, but you're running 6 days a week. So that means the other days really aren't that high. I mean, 6-8 miles during the week, you know, take away from the workouts, and it's not overly, I don't feel like it's overly crazy. I mean, I know I've seen some people criticizing it online and stuff like that, but you know, on the other hand, I can point out to, you know, 15 guys I coach who are, you know, businessmen themselves who are traveling pretty much all week. You know, I got guys that travel to, you know, China regularly and to Europe regularly, and they're running 70 miles a week, you know, and they're fine, you know, and they've got families, and they, you know, obviously, you know, they're, you know, they don't have any problems, and you know, they fit it in. They just manage their time better. Not to say that those other people don't, but I think when you are that busy, you're much better at managing those things, and you find out what's, you know, what is really important. So
right. Yeah, I think one of the things too is, you know, because I have the same thing. I've written articles where people are like, this schedule's crazy. There's no way somebody could do it. And I think the problem is, you know, people, they set limits on themselves before they even try something.
Absolutely.
So they see a schedule like the Hansen schedule where it has you running 5 or 6 days a week. And, you know, first of all, they don't look at, you know, what those five, they just say five days a week of running, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. But then they don't really think about, you know, they just limit themselves, say, I can't do this, and instead of going out and trying it. Because what I've noticed is that people always surprise themselves, especially beginners, with what they're able to do. And that's sometimes the best part about working with beginners, is that you work with somebody and like 3 months later, they're like, I can't believe I'm running this far. Like, I would have thought this was crazy. And that's a part of the thing, I think it is. And I think actually, you know, the Hansen's group themselves, I know one of the reasons that you've had success and that a lot of the athletes there have success is that you get there and you start, you know, training with an elite group, you start completely reframing your mind about what's possible. Because before you go to the Hansen's, somebody could say to you, like, running 140 miles a week is impossible. But then you go there and, you know, not that everybody at the Hansen's runs that much, but, you know, everybody's putting in a ton of miles. And everybody's running really fast, and then it just starts, all of a sudden it becomes commonplace that, oh, well, yeah, I mean, everybody runs 120 miles a week, that's normal, you know, and everybody runs 212, that's normal, and it, not that it is, but, you know, that's the mental process.
It is scary.
Right, right. So I think that's probably part of the reason that people have this, you know, kind of look at it and the Hansen's marathon method and think like, oh, that's crazy, they just haven't conditioned their mind yet.
Well, you know how it is. I mean, you see somebody who said, oh, I can't run more than 30 miles a week, and you start really looking into it, and a lot of times what you see is, you know, they're just running every day too hard. Mm-hmm. You know, if they just backed off a little bit, they'd be able to run more. And some of that's just so misguided. I mean, I see that a lot of this. They feel like they have to run hard in order to get better, and it's not necessarily that way. But
I mean,
it's amazing what people – and it's nice seeing when they do that, what they can do from there on out. Mm-hmm. It is exciting.
Yeah. So let's dive into that 16 miler. You know, I know that's, you know, whenever, I think if people have heard about the Hansen marathon method before, that's probably what they think of, you know, is kind of what makes it famous. You know, let's talk about, you know, why, you know, what's the theory behind the 16 miler, or I guess I should say more specifically the short and long run. and you know, and why, you know, 16 miles isn't as magic a number, just like 20 miles isn't a magic number.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's the big thing. It's not, people say, well, the 16 miler, what, why is it 16? I'm like, well, it's 16 because it fits better into the schedule. You know, it makes it more appropriate to the percentage of mileage that somebody's running.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not about, you know, it's not about 20 mile either. And I was actually thinking about this the other day when you got in touch with me, and I was just looking at, like, you start looking at Daniel's stuff, you start looking at Dr. V Hill's stuff, you start looking at who else?
Probably Fitzinger.
What's that?
Probably Pete Fitzinger.
Yeah, all those guys. You start looking at all those guys and all their stuff, and even Lydiard and things like that. Those programs weren't for the average runner. You know, they were for elite runners.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you start really looking as, and oh, Renato Canova is another guy I was looking at. And it's funny because Canova basically bashes Lydiard, but
right,
you look at their program, it's the same thing. And and it's just different names. But anyway, the thing is, it's like all these guys are doing, all this stuff is for elite, was really first designed for elite runners. And you start looking at what people focused on. They focused on 20 milers, and they failed to see what they were doing the rest of the week. I mean, you look at some of the workouts these guys are doing, like Canova's guys are doing like 5x5K at, you know, ridiculously fast paces. Like, in the average person, they're not going to do that. Or,
right,
you
right.
Know? So they're very, well, I can cut that out because I can't do that, but I can do 20 miles. So I'll keep that in, you know, so everything has to be in balance with what you're trying to accomplish. And I think honestly, back in the day, Kevin kind of settled on 16 just to be kind of a throw it in there, you know, kind of throw it in your face. Like, it doesn't matter what number it is, you know, it could be, you know, it could be 14 for somebody. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we really start talking about it and you start looking at, you know, even Daniel says in his stuff that, you know, you get past, you know, 3 hours and you're not really, the physiological stuff, you're really doing more harm than good. You're damaging yourself so much that it's going to take a long time to recover from that. So, so if you tell us, you know, if you take somebody who runs a 20 mile, let's say a 4 hour marathoner going out and do a 20 miler, you're going to be out there, you know, 3+ hours, you know, slogging through a 20 miler. So, you know, honestly, they're probably going to have to take a couple days off before.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to miss some running. So Friday and Saturday pretty much don't count on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they run Sunday, do the long run, and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they're so beat up, they can't do anything. So now it's Thursday, where they might be able to do something of quality. And then they got to take Friday and Saturday off again because they got another 20 mile on Sunday. So you really get past the point of training,
mm-hmm.
and now you're just surviving weeks. You're surviving 20 miles, basically, you know, and that's really what the whole point is that you can back that off 4 miles, get it into that, you know, 2.5 to 3 hour range for slower runners, and, you know, 2 hours for faster runners, you know, maybe a little under, and you're fine. You're getting the meta, you're getting the development, you're getting the physiological stuff. Anything over 90 minutes, you're getting that development. So why don't you back it down to where you can manage that and then still not have to take off time. You don't have to take Monday and Tuesday off to do something on Wednesday. Now you can do something on Tuesday because you're not so fatigued that you literally can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest, I think that's the biggest point with the schedules that Kevin wanted to do. Cause you know how it is. I mean, people focus so much on that 16 mile, but they fail to see that Thursday before they ran a 10 mile tempo.
Mm-hmm.
Friday they ran, Saturday they probably did a 10 miler or 12 miler, and then Sunday did a 16 miler. So they're doing a lot of running before that 16 miler. Then they're bouncing back on Tuesday and doing another workout, whether it be a speed workout or a strength workout. So it's not really, you're not really tapering or recovering to do a 20 mile. You're training through everything that you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's kind of the whole cumulative fatigue thing there is, you know, it's not one thing that's going to kill you. It's just all of it is, you know, at the end.
Yeah. And one thing I noticed, you know, looking at the schedules, and this is what I tell athletes who I don't, you know, who we do short or long runs with, is that, look at the entire week of training and look at the quality compared, look at the total number of quality miles run in comparison. If you use like a Hansen schedule and you say, you have the 16 miles, which is pretty quality, some of it's going to be up tempo. You have the tempo run during the middle of the week, you have the speed workout. So you add it all up and you're talking, 20, 25 miles worth of quality running. And then you say to somebody, well, let's look at what you would do if you did just, kind of a traditional schedule. It's you do one 20 miler, but it's usually have to do it so slow because you can barely finish 20 that it's right. Not really quality. It's just time on your feet. And then you can't really do anything else during the week. Maybe you get one session in. So you're talking about maybe 10 miles of quality running. Right. When we talk about quality, like maybe half marathon pace to marathon pace,
Right.
You're talking about now you're doing half the quality through the week. And I think
Absolutely.
That's what you're talking about, that balance where you're actually doing more. You're just not focusing so much on one specific run.
And that's why they need such a longer buildup, because they're doing half as much. It's not going to, they need more than 12, 14 weeks. They need 24 weeks. They need 32 weeks. They need those super long time frames because it takes that long for the body to adapt to something, because they're not getting the stimulus that they otherwise would.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, I know it's in the book, and I won't grill you on the specific numbers, but talk about a little bit of the scientific background of, why you don't necessarily need, a 4-hour run. Where talk about the aerobic benefits. Where do they stop? Where do they start? Along those lines.
Yeah, from everything I've seen, 90, you kind of have two, metabolic windows, and one's about 30 minutes. And then the other one is in 90 minutes. So, if somebody wants to do an afternoon run, they should probably make it 30 minutes to get that stimulus. On the other side of that, if they're doing a long run, 90 minutes is probably the minimum they want to be in order to start seeing those long run adaptations. So, mm-hmm. And then everything else, then you have that window of 90 minutes to about 3 hours is everything I've seen. So that's why it doesn't make sense for a lot of those people, is if they're going above 3 hours, they're not getting the adaptations. They're not in the optimal window. So
mm-hmm.
Even if they can recover from it, they're still past the point of not getting the optimal development. They might actually be doing more damage long-term than good. So,
yeah.
To me, it just makes sense to stay in that optimal window, maximize your training, and then you can focus on a marathon pace run. Because to me, that 10-mile tempo that they do, for 3 or 4 weeks, you add a warm up and cool down to that, and you're talking 14 to 16 miles anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's just as important, if not more important, than just a regular long run anyway. So
yeah,
they're not, then at that point they're spending a long time at marathon pace. They're feeling comfortable with marathon pace. They're developing the fuel utilization, so they're maximizing, burning fat, and their energy stores are much more balanced, and it makes more sense. So to me, that makes way more important than just going through and running, a 16 mile, or even if it's, 2 or 3 minutes slower than marathon pace per mile.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, you're going to get some aerobic development, but you really want to make sure that you're in that window.
Right. Yeah. I always tell people, after 3 hours, there's a diminishing return and there's an increased risk of injury and, because your legs are getting so tired, and then obviously the recovery on the back end that, mm-hmm. After 3 hours, you're really not getting any more aerobic benefit than you did at 2 hours and 30 minutes. So,
right.
But you're definitely increasing your injury risk. So why keep going? Why not stop it at the good stuff and then leave the running for a better day,
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the other thing I think you have to look at too is a lot of the runners we work with, they don't have, they don't have a coach going beside them and giving them water bottles every 3 miles. And I think that's a huge part of it too is,
mm-hmm.
You have to maximize, you can be depleted for these runs. And if you stretch it out so long past 3 hours, then you're really running the risk of becoming, obviously dehydrated, but really just really burning those fuel sources so low that, the body kind of goes into protective mode. You're like, nah, and I'm going to shut things down now,
mm-hmm.
You really want to avoid that. So you have to look at the practical side of it too, and just say, hey, but might not be possible because you're not be able to, you can only put so many goos in your shorts and then you're out. So,
yeah.
And that's part of the things we struggle with as a coach is you have to make sure that, somebody, just because you can't see them, you got to make sure they're still doing those little things like the fuel and stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot that goes into, scheduling a long run. So.
Yeah. No, I think it's you know, one of the reasons I was, you know, I'm really happy that you published this book, not only because, you know, I know you well and I'm glad that it's hopefully, you know, hopefully it's successful for you, but you know, for me also, it's one of those things where it's one of the first books to really challenge, you know, some of these long-held beliefs that we had. And you've mentioned it, you know, at the beginning when we talked about the long runs with, you know, Daniels and Lydiard and all those other coaches that have plans out there, Hal Higdon, those kind of things, where you're challenging the existing, just, oh, you have to run 20 miles. You know, I think if you were to ask somebody who has just started training for a marathon, you know, what do you have to do? They'd say, well, I got to run 20 miles in training. And, you know, what I tell people is, you know, think about where that started. And to me, that started in the 1970s when there was that mini boom with the Bill Rogers and Frank Shorter, where the average marathon finisher was like 3 hours. You know, I mean,
Absolutely.
and so guys were running 6 minute pace in training all the time. And so all these exercise scientists and coaches came out and said, well, glycogen runs out at 2 hours. You know, if you do an easy 20 miler for a guy that's a 3 hour, you know, 233 hour guy, that's like 6 minute pace. Boom, you got it, you know, 20 miles. And nobody's challenged that since things have changed in, you know, the 2000s with the second marathon boom, where now people are running 334 hours average, and that's completely changing their energy system.
Absolutely. And those guys are running a lot more mileage per week too. I mean, most of those guys, you know, the average mileage is a lot higher, I would suspect too. You read about, you know, a lot of those guys that just average guys, you know, working, you know, 40 hours a week, families, stuff like that. They were still running 100 plus miles a week, just because that was, and again, that's what those guys were doing. That's what Shorter was doing. That's what Rogers was doing. All of, and they were just emulating that. And yeah, it's definitely changed. I mean, we did some stats in the book, and you know, you can go on runningusa.org, and they have some really good stats for marathons and stuff. I mean, I think they have stats going back to like 1970, early 70s, where it was like 15,000 people finished a marathon. In 2012, it was, gosh, it was almost 600,000 people finished marathons in the U.S.
Wow.
So just huge growth. But along with that growth, you know, the average age of the marathoner got older. You know, now, you know, before it was in the maybe 30, now it's, you know, in the 40s. And along with that, the average time. But that's good. I mean, in the long run, that's good because more people are involved in the sport, which is
Right.
what ultimately we want, right? But it's definitely making people look at training differently. But again, but that's what spurred the market on, I think, for, you know, the minimal training plans too, is that, listen, it told somebody who was, you know, 45 years old and didn't want to run a ton of mileage that, hey, you can do this, which, you know, we know you can, but we know it's going to hurt really bad too. You know, and I think, you know, if you put the work in now, you suffer and do 18 weeks of training now, and you kind of sacrifice some social things in your life for a few weeks. You know, the payoff is much, much better. I think, you know, the better experience you have with it, the more likely you're going to be involved in the sport for a long time. And that, to me, that's more important than just running one and not doing it again. But
Yeah.
you know, that's, you know, neither here nor there, I guess.
You know, continuing on the theme of, you know, balancing the training, you know, looking at the Hansen's Marathon Method, the workouts, you know, it looks like each week you touch on, you know, a different energy system, you know, at least once a week, you know, speed, VO2 max kind of stuff, a threshold, and then obviously the long run. You know, what's the advantage of touching those energy systems throughout the entire training segment, you know, each week and never getting too far away from one?
Yeah, I think you know, when the just thinking off the advanced schedule offhand, you know, it starts right away into speed, and we do, I think, 8 or so weeks at speed, maybe a couple more. And honestly, that I think was more out of practicality than anything, because you know, these schedules that Kevin Keith made were first designed, you know, basically for the Detroit Marathon in the fall, so an October marathon, which meant you had to start training in the summer. But a lot of those guys are running 5Ks and 10K, you know, their summer road races during the summer. So I think they were thinking, okay, how can we train for a marathon but still allow these guys to run these local road races, you know, through June, July, you know, maybe through CREAM in August, you know, and then go from, and then switch over to marathon training program. So I think that's, I'm talking with Kevin and Keith, that's basically the impression that I had with on that. But you know, and it does. And honestly, I think it's fine. I mean, you look at typical Lydiard, and you took a lot of these guys will say, well, you start out with slower stuff and then you build to the faster stuff. Like I was reading some stuff on Lydiard, and he would say, well, I'd get guys up to where they would do 5K, maybe 10K, maybe 5K intervals the last few weeks of a marathon segment. And after, you know, training for, you know, 10 marathons, I can't imagine running 5K stuff, 10K stuff the last couple of weeks of a marathon. So
Doesn't make any sense.
Tired. So to me, the practicality of that doesn't necessarily make sense. And admittedly, Lydiard says, he's like, you know, I would just jump off the ladder at X point, wherever you felt comfortable. So I think even he realizes, okay, maybe you don't need to do this stuff later in the marathon segment. So to me, why not do it in the front of the segment? You know, because a lot of times these guys, they're not training very hard. So even if they're doing 5K stuff, 10K stuff, it's not as fast as what it could be because they're not ready to run super fast.
Right.
So, and a lot of these guys they've never done intervals. They've never done things like this. So to me, why not have them quote unquote mess it up, you know, in the early summer when it doesn't really matter, as long as they're doing something, that's all that particularly matters, you know? So to me, that makes sense. And then they can still do these things. And, you know, you get a lot of people, they just want to run a marathon. They've never run anything before. So this actually gets them fairly in shape to do something shorter so that they can run like a 5K or 10K. And then you can base what you want to do for the marathon off of that. And then you're going to switch over to marathon specific stuff with the strength and the longer tempo runs. So
yeah,
I think that's why that's why the speed stuff's more in the front. But then, yeah, you switch over to the strength, which is really not a whole lot faster than marathon pace, but it's deceiving because a lot of people say, well, you know, you're only running 10 seconds faster than marathon pace per mile, but you're doubling the volume too. And that's the other thing with speed too, the volume, you know, 3 miles worth of speed in the early part of the segment, as a percentage-wise, is not a very high percentage of the weekly mileage too. So you don't run the risk of, you don't have that super high risk of injury because the volume of it's so low.
Right, right.
But then the strength, you obviously double that volume, and then it's more marathon specific. So, but you're right, you're touching more lactate threshold stuff with there, and by that point, the marathon, the tempo runs are, you know, 8 to 10 miles, so you're really more a high aerobic pace. You know, you're still underneath lactate threshold, and you're running at a high aerobic pace for, you know, over an hour for most people.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're right. You touch on a lot of stuff, but, you know, the speed stuff, you know, you can say, well, it keeps turnover up a little bit too. Your legs feel a little bit fresh. And then the tempo runs, obviously you're practicing marathon pace, and then the long runs are, in the higher end of the spectrum for the mileage. So
yeah,
we definitely touch on everything. And I think having that balance is key, especially, again, I go back to the long-term development, you know, having that, you know how to, you've seen those training pyramids where the bottom of the pyramid is easy running and you get to the top and it's VO2 max stuff. Well, a lot of times when you're doing a smaller, you know, a 3-day program or something to that effect, you know, all you're doing is focusing on stuff at the top of that pyramid. You're not focusing on anything at the bottom of that pyramid. So again, short-term, that's great because you're developing that high-end stuff right away. But there's only so far you can take that, you know,
right.
Without, you have to go back to the bottom, push that foundation up, and then you can handle more of the faster stuff. So having that balance, I think, allows that. It allows them to handle more mileage initially, and then you can go back to other things when you're done with the marathon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think the program's good for somebody who wants to just keep running marathon after marathon after marathon. I think you really need that break in there. You need to do a marathon and then maybe do some halves or some, you know, back to some shorter road races and then do a marathon again.
Yeah. No, I mean, when I looked at the speed, you know, that was one of the things that I thought was really great about the program is that, you know, from what I see, what happens is people do just what you said they shouldn't do is they run marathon after marathon after marathon. And it's just, you know, every 10, 12 weeks they're running another marathon. And what ends up happening is they just do the same training over and over. It's just threshold runs and long runs, which are good. You know, it's not, I mean, those are definitely the foundation of good running. But what ends up happening is after 2-3 years, you haven't touched your speed. You haven't touched your VO2 max. You know, you haven't touched those high-end, you know, anaerobic type training events. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're just, you know, it's like, I always, I tell people it's like trying to open a window blind. You know, you can, when you have two of the pulley strings, you know, you can pull one side and one side will come down, but it will never get to the bottom or never get to the top because you can only pull one side so high. And that's what I see when you do the speed work is that you're really balancing things so that way when you pull the pulley strings, everything kind of goes up at the same time and your ultimate ceiling is a lot higher.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's why one of the things I think it's a great addition to the program and to be able to balance all those energy systems within a training cycle.
Absolutely, yeah. And then, you know, you talk about things like fiber recruitment and things like that where...
Right.
Exactly. If somebody does all long runs and marathon pace stuff, they never touch on... you know, type 2B fibers or even their fast twitch fibers. They just never, those things, and they shut down your body. If you're not using them, your body's going to just shut them down. So,
right.
You know, the more you have those things, I mean, you talk about hitting the wall, you know, what you could really help yourself is, you know, if you get those intermediate fibers and those fast twitch fibers used a little bit, your body can go on those. You know, the force production in your slow twitch is going to decline. You know, you get to a point, they're going to decline. And that might be at 18 miles, it might be at 24 miles. But if you haven't touched on those fibers, they're not going to be there to help you. But if you have, they might be what gets you the rest of the way in, mm-hmm. you know. And that's one of those things that a lot of times they're just completely never even thought about, you know, in those types of programs, because they just don't. The only goal is to get them to the marathon finish line, and mm-hmm. they don't really, not necessarily care how, just as long as they can, you know. So
yeah, exactly. So this is a question that I'm excited to ask you, only because I love to hear your experiences. You know, what are some of the biggest training mistakes that you see with a lot of the athletes that you work with or that approach you, you know, either about the Hanson's Marathon Method or that want to work with you?
I think biggest thing I see is people are excited, and sometimes they're too excited. And what they do is they want to add too much too soon. Sometimes they get mad at me because I back them way off. And I think initially they're like, well, what the heck is this guy doing?
Mm-hmm.
And you try to explain to him, but it's like, well, I'm running slower than I was. But I have to just keep reminding them, like, well, where do you want to be? And where are you at now trying it, the methods you have been trying? You know, and that's something that I struggled with a lot. But I think the biggest thing is if you can get people to back off their intensity a little bit, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of times, because we talked about it, you know, I get a lot of people who think, you know, 30 to 40 miles a week is the most they can run, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not a matter of ability. It's a matter of just for instance, I just got an email from a young woman who runs 6 days a week, and she does every other day, she is on the treadmill. She just does intervals as hard as she can for 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other day, she runs 6 miles a day at 90%-ish of her heart rate maximum.
Wow.
So, yeah, absolutely. You're only going to run 30 miles a week.
And right. I can't even do that.
You really somewhere because you're fit. You're really fit. So, you know, that was a big thing. And that's not to that extreme, but that's a lot of the types of things that I see. And honestly, but I think it goes back to just a lot of miseducation about what you really need. So I think that's my job as a coach, to educate them as, you know, this is what you really need. You know, and this is how you can do it. And as a science guy, you know, I hate the testimonials and stuff, but as a businessman, you need them because you're only as good as the people who've had success with your program. So, you know, I can talk about journal articles all day long and it doesn't matter to people. Mm-hmm. But if I said Bob ran, you know, 15-minute PR at Chicago doing this, and he's been trying 10 years to break 3 hours, that means something to them, to that person. So, yeah, I mean, you know, but it's hard because people are used to doing things the way they've been doing them, and it's hard for them to change. And then, you know, as a coach, I get frustrated. He's like, well, why are you paying me this money if you're just going to go back to doing whatever you were doing anyway?
Right, right.
And sometimes that actually wakes them up, and they're like, you know what? You're right. And then other times they just get mad. But
yeah.
But it's, you got to be honest with them and say, listen, you know, this, you got to, at some point, you got to trust me on this, and mm-hmm. it'll be fine. If not, then, you know, we can reevaluate later on. But but you know the struggles.
No, I mean, mine's very similar when people ask me, and mine's always everybody always wants to run so fast on their easy days. And we invited, I don't know, I'm sure you know her, Camille Herron. Mm-hmm. We invited her on a couple weeks ago, and she talked about, you know, what her easy pace was, because for so many of my athletes, they run and you know, they're maybe 3:10, 3:20 marathoners, and they're trying to run like 7:30, 8 minute pace on their easy days. And I'm like, shit, I was like a 2:20 marathoner, and like, I would sometimes run like 7:30 pace on my easy days. And, you know, Camille came on and was like, oh yeah, I run like 9 minute pace. And she's a 2:37 marathoner. And I know you, Luke, you know, we've run together quite a bit. And I know there have been runs where you've gone and it's just like, you know, we're just like 8 minute pace. We're like, yeah, that's
absolutely
good for today.
That's all you got.
Right. And, you know, I work with so many athletes who it's like every day they're just like, can I run faster on my easy day? And, you know, I keep trying to tell them that's not where you're going to get better. You know, and then on the flip side, when they feel like crap on an easy day, they're like, oh, I couldn't even run 8 minute pace on an easy run. You're like, that's not what it's about. Like, if you can only run 10-minute pace, like,
most
that's
of the time
fine.
That's where they're supposed to be anyway.
Right.
They feel like crap, but
right.
You know, it's that. Then you just say yes. That's fine. You know, because it absolutely is fine. And it, you know, it doesn't matter about pace a lot of those times. But there's a day. I mean, I'll adjust things for people. If I've been working with them for a long time, and like, you know, the one thing you can adjust pretty easily is marathon or the long runs for the marathon. And
mm-hmm.
And sometimes they really just can't run more miles just due to time constraints and things like that. And that's
right.
You know, that's completely understandable. So what we'll do, you know, is we'll do some different long stuff. Like we'll do some of that fast finish long runs, or we'll do
mm-hmm.
like a tempo run in a long run, or I'll do a fartlek in the middle of a long run, and just
yep.
something to change things up for them too. You know, so that's something that I feel like as a coach I'm getting a lot better at doing
mm-hmm.
is just making sure there's some variety in there for them. And now honestly, that stuff's gonna be tremendously help, because I mean it forces you to break up your long run and
right
and it gives them some varying intensity. So
yeah, so last question before we kind of let you go, but you know, I love asking this question. You know, in your own training, if you could go back 5 to 8 years, you know, probably, you know, 2005 2006, and tell yourself one thing, you know, what would that be and why?
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about it but definitely would just go back to being patient. You know, just I think my biggest problem was I had a good race, and then I thought I'm gonna just hit a home run the next time out. You know, I'm gonna crush the next race, and I didn't. And instead of backing off and reevaluating, I just kept trying to hit that home run over and over and over again,
mm-hmm.
and it just wasn't gonna happen because I was, you know, training at 5:05 pace. Well, okay, well, that wasn't good enough, so let's train at 5:02 pace, and that wasn't good enough, so let's train at 5-minute pace. And you know, you're ultimately just adding on more and more and more to your already fatigued systems, and it just probably overtrained for so much that
mm-hmm.
I ended up setting myself back, you know, literally probably a couple of years. And that's the biggest thing. I think, you know, I don't mind trying to swing for that home run, but if you don't get it, you really need to take a look at why you didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you really need to say, okay, I ran 2:18, I ran 3 hours, whatever the case is, and say, okay, what do I really, really think I can do? And that's what I need to focus on. So that might be saying, okay, now, let's not try to run that 2:40 marathon. Let's back it down to 2:50. And honestly, you have a better chance of running maybe 2:45 off of that
mm-hmm.
than completely overtraining for a 2:40 and being overtrained going to the starting line, if you make it to the starting line. So
right.
I definitely would think that's the biggest thing, just being patient. And again, I didn't see the short. I was seeing the short term and not the long term. And ultimately, you know, it cost me the long term. So I think, you know, you really need to learn that patience and not be so. It goes to the same thing as, like, why do people want to run their easy runs faster? Because they think that it's going to make them faster. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're going to get better quicker.
Right.
And it doesn't. And it ultimately sets them back further. You know, in the short term, it might be fine. But, you know, in, you know, a year or two, it might not be where they want to be. So
mm-hmm.
really think that would be the thing. And now and going on to that patience thing a little bit more, I think just picking and choosing the days you really want to hammer. Like, you
mm-hmm.
know, there was, you know, when you know how it was when guys were here, so it turned into a mess sometimes.
Yeah,
and
slugfest.
It did. You know, everybody's out there swinging, and we're going to see who the last man standing is. And you know, sometimes that's fine, and other times you got to say, hey, you know, this is not the day for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and now, and maybe it's just because I'm older, but you know, now I know I can look at a schedule I get from Kevin and Keith and say, okay, this day I'm gonna there's gonna be a lot of effort into this, and then
mm-hmm.
the next day I'm gonna be like, okay, this is, I'm just trying to get through this with as little damage as possible, and then move on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that's the key to it, and you know especially on a longer segment like that, because it's just, if you try to hammer on everything, it is not gonna work out well. You know, it just ends up being rough.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
Situation.
Cool. Well, Luke, you know, I definitely appreciate you taking the time here. A little bit more about the book. Where can people pick up the book if they wanna get a copy?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, like indiepress.com. There's a couple other websites you can get it from.
Okay. So what we'll do too is, you know, we'll link this up at the bottom of the show notes for anybody that's listening on the podcast. You know, visit the Runners Connect website, go to our blog and visit videos, and you'll see the video, and we'll put some show notes up. But for people that don't know, it's this book here. It's Hansen's Marathon Method. So if you're going to look it up on Amazon, and A Renegade Path to Your Fastest Marathon. And again, it's Luke Humphrey is the author. And so yeah, Luke, again, we appreciate you taking the time. I know you had a busy day, and appreciate you taking the time and sharing with us. This was a great interview. I got a lot out of it. I know my audience is as well. So I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Jeff. It was a good talk.
Thanks.
All right, see you.